Welcome to Creekside Chats with successful multifamily real estate investors. Dr. Allen chats with successful investors exploring their journey from setback to triumph. Through this window, we glimpse the truths that inspire our guests to invest abundantly and flourish in all areas of life. And now your host, Dr. Allen.
Welcome to Creekside Chats with successful multifamily real estate investors. I'm your host, Dr. Allen. Today's guest has been a debt and equity investor in real estate since 2000. He started his career and had spent nearly 15 years in the information technology field, managing risk, business intelligence, and quality of complex systems, software, and processes. While building a successful career in IT, he has always been investing in real estate because of its predictability of outcome and well-understood risks. He is the author of How to Choose a Smart Real Estate Investment Fund. He also hosts the podcast Big Mike Fund. Welcome to the show, Mike Soltnik.
So welcome to the show, Mike. Pleased to have you here with us today. Let's take some time here to get to know the man behind the successful investor here. So I like to start with going back to your childhood, because I think to get to know the real person, we need to know the child within. So if you can bring to mind a memorable experience from your childhood that as you look back on that, you think of it as a formative experience, and your childhood could be anything from 1 year old to 50 year old. So what was a real formative experience in your life?
Well, that's I was not prepared for these type of questions, but I played chess a lot as a child. So my father was also a chess master. So I grew up in the former Republic of the former Soviet Union, Moldova, if you've heard of it. Mm-hmm. And I played chess. My father was a chess champion of the capital. I think he was a 5-time champion. So a lot of my memories are associated with chess, and I played on many teams. And I'm trying to think back to the childhood days. It's been a while. But it was sort of a weirdest experience when I played. My father would come and watch, and I felt always a little strange because he was both my father and a coach, and that was difficult to have father as a coach to some degree, if you know what I mean.
Right, yeah.
Probably true in every sport. So memorable experience. I never enjoyed when my father watched the game, and I had to play and played a lot of competitive chess, and the observation was my request to dad not to watch the game. We're happy to analyze them afterwards, but Let me be who I am. Let me play without you observing me while I'm playing. And then you can analyze afterwards. I don't know if there's a lesson in it, but it certainly made my life easier as a child. And I was playing better that way.
How did your dad take that?
Oh, he was cool. He was, he wanted to watch the game as it was happening, but the challenge was that it wasn't helping. And he realized I don't know if it's true in baseball or any other sport. The parents should not be generally coaches. It's a rare situations when they can, but generally they don't do a great job coaching. And the good thing about chess, you can analyze the game right after the game or two or 3 hours later, and you can learn the same lessons. And live, it's a little pressure. I was afraid to make a mistake, and my father would watch it live. So it was a little strange. I don't know if it makes any sense.
It makes perfect sense. Yeah, I could understand that. I'd like to know, what was your decision to actually leave? You said Moldova, is that where you
are? Moldova, yeah.
Yes. What was the decision to leave Moldova and come to the USA?
Well, the decision was fairly easy, and both painful and easy. So my father passed away in Moldova a year before we left, and my mother said, we got to get out. Mm. We felt that he was mistreated in the hospital. So I'm a Jew. My father is a Jew, and in the former Soviet Union, there was a lot of discrimination against Jews. I mean, it's a one of these issues where it's both political, not necessarily, but there was a street-level discrimination and a state-level discrimination. So that's a little bit of a, if you know, compare it to what's going on here in the United States. There's some level of racial challenges now in the United States, and minorities feel that there is unfair treatment. In the former Soviet Union, it was a lot worse. If you're a Jew, they can deny you a job. They can literally tell you in your face that you're a Jew. That's why you're not getting a job. And so my father was killed in the hospital with some experimental drugs. We don't even know what happened. Mm. So we felt that it was just terrible. It was mistreatment because, it was a Jew. And again, the Jew here is not exactly the way it is here. Here it's a religion. Over there, it was a nationality. It was written on your passport. You actually couldn't go anywhere without a passport. So you give your passport, they look at it, you're a Jew. Hey, you're a second-tier citizen, mm. in a matter of speaking. So this is many years ago, but that was the... when he passed away, and they couldn't tell us exactly why he passed away in the hospital, and we believe they used some experimental drugs to kill him off. Who knows? I mean, we don't know. Mother said, we're getting out of this crazy country. And we got out. So we went through immigration in 89. Originally, we left to go to Israel, and then we changed to go to the United States while in Rome, applied for political refugee status in the U.S. consulate in Rome. We were granted, given the situation. And so we entered the United States in 89 as political refugee from the former Soviet Union. Hmm. So that's the decision tree. And you can't compare with all the challenges the United States has. You can't compare it to the life in the former Soviet Union or Russia now. It's a very different system. It's a one-party system. It's a very rigid the democracy we see here. It's not a perfect democracy, but it beats the heck out of regime that they had then, the communist era regime versus even today's kind of Russian, the Putin's regime. It's a regime. It's a dictatorship, a form of dictatorship. Mm-hmm. So there is no democracy of any kind.
Yeah.
I hope it makes sense. A little different. It's
interesting. Yeah, people's backgrounds are always interesting, and the decisions that go into to life, particularly big changes like immigrating from your home country to a new country.
I'll add this one quick point. That's why half the world wants to come to the United States. The U.S. democracy, however imperfect, it is still a much better system than many other countries where both economic, educational, political freedoms just don't exist the same way they exist here. Yeah. So this country has plenty of challenges, but in comparison, everybody in the world, or not everybody, but a lot of people would like to move here because this is still a land of opportunity, not a perfect world, but better than many other places. Let me put it this way.
Yeah. So how many years ago was that?
89. I mean, it's been 31 years. Well, not quite 31, 30 years.
30 years, yeah. Well, so you said you came with your mother. Were you married at the time? Or?
No, I married here. Married here. My mother's still hanging in there. Love my mother. She's 90. She's turning 90. And so she lives upstate New York. I mean, I'm in Brooklyn, New York. But I married here. Met my wife here at a wedding. But she's also from like not the exactly the old country. I would call about Italy the old country. But we're from a different part of the former Soviet Union, from Ukraine. Actually, not far from Moldova. It's kind of a town in Ukraine.
Oh, okay. What were as you made that leap from Moldova to the U.S., what were some of the major challenges that you faced in making that transition?
Well, I mean, this was a long time ago. I was 18 years of age, so the challenges don't look like challenges. Language, obviously, as you could hear, a little bit of accent still left over. Having immigrated at 18, I didn't get rid of the accent completely. The language was a little bit of a barrier initially, but it's not difficult to overcome it. I kind of used the deep dive approach. I went to school here in Binghamton, New York. I'm not sure if you know. It's a SUNY school, State University of New York at Binghamton. I basically cut off as much as I can conversations with Russian-speaking folks, and pretty much lived all within the on campus with lived on a cute floor with a cute name, artificial intelligence and robotics. So I joined all the geeks. Uh-huh. And but there were geeks from all over the world, and we all spoke English and whatever broken. It was a fascinating experience. There were more immigrants in that floor than native speakers. Uh-huh. But it was a geek floor, no matter of speaking. So that's, I remember my college days of spending time with computer science, mathematics, engineering geeks. But that's me. I like that stuff.
So you didn't. So had you had any English background before coming to the States? Or?
I did. So we studied English in high school. Okay. So I did have, but what I learned is how to write and read.
Right.
Speaking was very different. First of all, it was a British version of English. Second of all, we studied a lot of theory.
Yeah.
When I came here, I could not speak. I tried to speak. And the folks who I was talking to, I vividly remember the experience. We were supposed to fly. We were in an airport, and I was talking to an attendant at the ticket booth, and she could not understand me. I could barely understand her. And it went, you know, say it again, say it again, say it again, until in the simpler terms we understood each other. Yeah. But I could certainly write, and I could certainly read.
Well, at least you did have that, but yeah. So you enrolled in school, enrolled in college just about as soon as you got off the plane here, and you couldn't speak the language, and so probably you're having difficulty understanding the language. So how did you get by in your classes with that enormous language barrier?
So, just a little bit of a comment on this. So I came over, my mother and I moved to Rochester, New York, and it was middle of the year, and I actually, instead of going straight to college, while I was in between, I started to go to high school, even though I finished high school back in the Moldova. So I was put in one of the more difficult schools in Rochester, so it was a weird experience for me. Because it was a sort of a technical school, Edison Tech, but it was helpful to learn the language. So I spent about 6 months before I went to college in a high school just learning English. And it was interesting. And then when I went to college, the first year roommate, it was funny, I called him the black kid from Brooklyn. I mean, this non-discriminatory at all. Okay, so the Russian guy goes to school, being into New York first year, and my roommate was a very nice guy, Will Peek, but he was a kid from Brooklyn, and he spoke with a little bit of the voice from the hood slang, let me put it this way. It was very, very interesting for me to learn, and for a while I couldn't understand him, but that deep dive living with the black kid again, with this, you know, weird Russian, and we bonded. We were good roommates for a year, and it was pretty interesting. He taught me everything about understanding football and baseball and everything about the sports, and before I knew, I understood a lot of American culture.
Well, cool, yeah.
So I don't know if it helps, but so language came through just interaction and classes. Listen, I mean, I don't know if you're 18, 19, 20, language comes fast. I mean, no matter what you call it, it just comes.
Well, for some people, it would be a challenge for me. It was only 2 weeks. I spent 2 weeks in Mexico, and I really hadn't had any Spanish lessons before going down there. But it was an enormous challenge to be in a country where language is not the predominant, I mean, where English is not the predominant language.
But my comment is just 2 weeks. Right? If you spend there 6 months, you'd be speaking language enough. So that was my experience. Before I went to college, I spent 6 months in high school, and then going to college. It's 6 months is enough to get the basics. It's the rest is just comes over time. You start taking classes, and it's a little bit easier when you take technical classes because the language of math is language of math. You don't need as much of so a lot of the classes I start taking were computer science, math, and finance. And as long as you can do the technical part of the class, you'll do well, even if your English is not ideal. So,
well, fascinating, and what a journey that certainly has been. As you look back over the course of your time here in the United States, to the day to where you are today, what has been one of your biggest challenges, and what have you learned from overcoming that?
Oh, another interesting question. So, the challenge has been on a personal level having extra weight. I mean, I'm not a super fat guy, but I'm not skinny either. And I came over into the country actually being pretty skinny. And after college, I gained a lot of weight. Just kind of, I don't know how to best explain it. Just food has a lot of calories, and it's been many years I've been struggling getting the weight down. So it's a lot of people have the challenge. The food is just too good, and it's not easy to. So I'm not unique in that challenge, and still struggle with it. Make progress, lose some weight, and gain back, and need to make some changes in eating habits. And so it's been a challenge for me, and I hope one of these days I get a change. It's a life change, not a diet. And that's been the challenge. You go on a diet, you lose weight, and you go back out of it, and right back.
Yeah, I've had the same challenge all life. So yeah, I can relate to that.
So that's been the biggest challenge. Other than that, I certainly, you know, like what I do, and that's a success to everyone. I mean, you've heard of the intersection of three circles. I'm sorry, in the triangle circles. It's something you know, something you like, it's something that makes you money. And I've been doing that in real estate, and that's been my journey. Mm-hmm. So you almost don't think about your successes because it just comes naturally. But you do think about your challenges because you learn a lot more from challenges. So hard to say. I you know, I've tried everything and I've concluded. I've made some conclusions. That's maybe my most recent thing is to go to sleep earlier. Maybe that'll help. Although it's hard because you don't eat, you know, if you go to sleep early. But that's been the challenge, eating late at night. So I don't know how exciting it is. A lot of people struggle with that, snacks. But
yes, for sure. Well, you started out in the computer sciences and math field. A lot of people in the real estate industry seem to begin there. What was it that led you to transition? I mean, you may still be in the tech industry, but what was it that led you into real estate investing?
So the transition took place in 2009. I went full-time into real estate. So I had a successful career and enjoyed the software and had executive positions, vice presidents, directors, and I had a successful career. I was burned out. I was looking for an exit at some point. I started investing in real estate since 2000. So that's the beauty about real estate. Is that you can invest passively, you can do it slow, and you don't have to rush. You could take your steps. And here in New York, it was hard to go wrong. I mean, if you just buy and hold strategy, works extremely well here because the market has appreciated historically. So you haven't seen the yo-yo behavior of South Florida, California, none of that stuff. So here, you couldn't go wrong. Just whatever you buy goes up. So as long as the cash flow never really was a big part of the investing strategy. But if you invest for appreciation, for growth, assets here do well. So having seen enough of progress and appreciation, you pretty much come to the conclusion that real estate, you could do both. You could be passive and active. And so the transition was almost forced to a degree. I was an investor in the original version of the funds that I manage now. I started by my friend who is still full-time in the software. He started, couldn't run it. He asked me if I could run it because I was burned out. So I had my last technology gig in May 2009, and I was done. I was burned out. It's a different world. There's nothing wrong with that. It's just if you know anything about technology, the software has to be up and running. You have customers. If you have a bunch of people reporting to you, you work weekends, nights, software has to be deployed at midnight. All that stuff gets to you, and you lose the joy in that work because you basically, anything goes wrong, you get the blame. Everything goes right. Well, it worked as the way it's supposed to work. So in June 2009, I go full-time in real estate and don't look back. It's a lot more fun. So that's the transition has been burnout here. Here's an opportunity to start full-time running a fund. At the time we were doing transactional funding, then we went to hard money lending and kind of expanded from there. So you could both do the passive and active. Active has benefits, obviously. You can make more money. You could make money managing other people's money. There's all kinds of things you can do. Transition was sort of, hey, sick and tired of this. I could do this full time over a period of a month. We'll rock and roll.
Well, you make it sound like it was a real easy transition. I'm sure there was challenges there, though.
Yeah, there were challenges. The primary challenge is you have a nice full-time, great-paying job with all kinds of benefits and nice 401ks and all that stuff. And here you are now, you eat what you kill.
It's all
you're now running a small yeah. business, and you have to you make money as you run it. So transition from a full-time employee in executive capacity to a small business owner it's not easy. It's psychologically not easy, and you start making a whole lot less money. But you are your own boss. You don't have people to tell you, hey, listen, you got to work 11 o'clock at night because we're deploying the software and people need to have it up and running 6 o'clock in the morning the next day.
Yeah. Well, fascinating conversation. It has been a pleasure getting to know you and understand the person that you have become here. Unfortunately, we're running out of time. A whole lot of things that I would love to explore with you, but we're coming to the end of our time here. So, Mike, if you could please share with our viewers and listeners how it is that they can get in touch with you.
BigMikeFund.com. And as I was joking, Big Mike didn't come from the blue. I do go to a number of masterminds, and people, I'm known as the Big Mike. So I do have the website, BigMikeFund.com. And if you misspell it and you just type BigMikeFund.com, I promise it's not a kinky site.
Well, thank you so much, Mike, for taking the time to be on the program. And I've enjoyed our conversation.
Likewise.
I hope we can have future conversations and delve into some of these areas we weren't able to get to today. So,
sounds good. Thank you. And best of wishes to your audience and best of wishes to you.
Thank you, Mike.
Thank you for tuning in to Creekside Chats with Successful Multifamily Real Estate Investors, brought to you by Steve Talker Capital. Steedtalker Capital works with both new and established investors nationwide, creating opportunities to flourish in all areas of life. As part of our efforts to make the world a better place, Steedtalker Capital contributes to activities and organizations committed to better understand the equine. These endeavors attempt to enhance the human treatment of horses worldwide. Steedtalker Capital, working for a world where all creatures, great and small, flourish abundantly. For resources to enhance your well-being through multifamily real estate investment, connect with us online at capital.steedtalker.com.